It is Monday, July 8th, 2013. And from the Carver Center for Public Radio, this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellum. Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle. The 15th annual KUAF Summer Jazz Series begins July 13th with American bebop and jazz pianist, composer, and singer Bob Doro. This series will continue with the Composer Showcase July 27th and the Amina Figueroa Quintet on August 16th. Tickets and more information are available online at KUAF.com. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, a groundswell of opposition has developed regarding a plan by SWEPCO for a new transmission system in parts of North Arkansas. Plus, Nicole Holland of Springdale tells us her story of life in Paris before World War II. We'll hear from her and her daughter, Brenda Hancock, later. The new book about Nicole's life is titled One of the Lucky Ones. First, former Secretary of State and First Lady Hillary Clinton will be honored today at a dedication ceremony for Little Rock's new Children's Library. Bobby Roberts is the director of the Central Arkansas Library System.
Secretary Clinton will be in town, and we will be dedicating the new Children's Library in her honor. We had offered that to her, and she was delighted with it and pleased to accept, and we're just absolutely excited that she's going to allow us to do this.
There are no more spaces available for people to get into the library's auditorium for the event, but the library will be hosting other events in the afternoon. Robert says it's a worthy tribute for someone who has done so much on behalf of children. The federal government's decision to delay requiring employers with over 50 employees to provide insurance is a good move, says Jay Bradford, Arkansas Insurance Commissioner. He says it will give businesses one more year to make adjustments and will not be a hindrance to employees seeking insurance through the new health care exchange.
Based on the person's individual income, that's what develops these subsidies. And so the lower income people have, the more subsidies they're eligible for. And so it really should not have any effect on the individual consumers from a monetary point of view.
Until employers start providing insurance in 2015, insurance subsidies will be provided by the federal government for those employees. Jay Bradford says the delay in implementation only affects about 2% of Arkansas businesses. However, some in Washington see the delay in implementing the mandate as a political ploy. Speaking during yesterday morning's Capitol View on KARK-TV in Little Rock, Arkansas Congressman Tim Griffin told Roby Brock that the delay is recognition there are problems with the Affordable Care Act as currently written.
They wanted to take the implementation of the employer mandate and the penalties that go with it. They wanted to take that and kick it past the 2014 election. It's pretty clear that's what they're doing. I think, for me, it's another indication that this is a flawed law.
Congressman Griffin says the employer and individual mandates in the Affordable Care Act are unfair and that implementation of both should be delayed so Congress can find a better way to implement health care reform with a new law. Governor Mike Beebe is working in conjunction with the Arkansas Forestry Commission to spread awareness about summer forest fires. Last year, the state experienced more than 1,000 forest fires because of dry condition, and many are also likely to occur during 2013. The governor noted in his weekly radio address, firefighters have been cooperative despite changes that occurred with the turn of the fiscal year.
While the Arkansas Forestry Commission coordinates responses and provides most of the equipment being used, much of the firefighting manpower comes from volunteer fire departments across the state. They all work tirelessly to protect our forests and our communities when fires ignite. Keep our firefighters in mind as you take your vacations and camping trips this summer.
Governor Beebe also said increased commission funding over the next 2 years will bring extra manpower and new equipment to help fight existing fires. George Washington's copy of the U.S. Constitution is now on display at the Clinton Presidential Center in Little Rock. The document, initially obtained from a private collection, is making its way across the country to all 13 presidential libraries. Clinton Library Education Specialist Kathleen Pate says items from other locations have also been included in the exhibit about the former president.
We have borrowed from Crystal Bridges the Gilbert Stuart portrait of Washington, known as the Constable Hamilton portrait. And then we also have documents on display from the National Archives. One is a letter from Chief Justice John Jay to George Washington when he was president. and one is a letter from George Washington to what he refers to as the heads of department.
The Constitution will be on display until Friday, when it will travel to the George W. Bush Presidential Library in Texas. Last week, the U.S. Department of the Interior officially rescinded its designation of the White River Watershed as a National Blue Way. The change came after a number of state and local stakeholders sent letters to Secretary of the Interior Ken Salazar requesting the designation be removed from the White River Watershed. According to the Department of the Interior, the designation was originally intended to encourage conservation and sustainable economic activities, and that participation in the program was voluntary for private landowners. New unemployment numbers were released last week for the month of May. According to numbers by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the jobless rate for the Northwest Arkansas region edged upward a half percentage point from April to May, resting at 5.6%, the same as in May 2012. However, the size of the area's workforce grew by about 1,300 people year to year, and the number of unemployed persons in Northwest Arkansas grew similarly during that same time frame. In the Fort Smith metropolitan area, the new numbers painted a bleaker picture. The Fort Smith region's jobless rate for May grew by a half percent from April to May, but the rate was 0.4% higher than it was May of last year. The area's overall labor force grew by about 1,700 people comparing year to year, but the actual number of unemployed people in the Fort Smith metro area only grew by about 700 between May 2012 and 2013. The Northwest Arkansas Naturals had a rocky Independence Day weekend on the road in Texas. After losing 2 of 3 in Midland, the Naturals moved on to Frisco for a 3-game set against the Rough Riders. The Nats lost the first game Saturday 6-1, made up for it yesterday with a 7-5 victory, and the Nats now have record 34-53 on the season. The series will wrap up tonight in Frisco. Tonight, partly cloudy, lows from 70 in Northwest Arkansas to the mid-70s in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, highs from 94 to 99. Arkansas River Valley could have a heat index of 102 tomorrow afternoon. And for Tuesday night, mostly clear, lows between 71 and 76. This is Ozarks at Large. Last April, SWEPCO applied to the Arkansas Public Service Commission for a Certificate of Environmental Compatibility and Public Need to construct and operate a 345,000 extra-high voltage transmission line from the Shipe Road substation west of Centerton in Benton County to the Kings River in Carroll County, where a new substation will be constructed. The project is being met with a strong surge of opposition. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has this report.
SWEPCO was directed to tackle the transmission project several years ago by Southwest Power Pool, of which it's a member. SPP is one of 9 transmission organizations nationwide mandated by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission to ensure a reliable power supply at competitive wholesale prices, all to serve our electron-guzzling culture. SPP oversees the electrical transmission structure across the Mid-South to ensure efficient interstate transport and marketing of regionally produced nuclear, hydro, coal, wind, and solar energy. Maps show a varicose vein-like pattern of EHV transmission lines constructed in the region, including one in extreme northwest Arkansas, but the rest of the Ozarks remains in the clear, and many Ozarkians want to keep it that way. The Arkansas Public Service Commission, which is vetting the request, has on file nearly 50 individual business and municipalities standing in opposition to it, along with an additional 4,800 individual comments against it. APSC Executive Director John Bethel.
It is a significant number of comments on this case.
Opponents had 30 days to formally intervene and will be expected to testify at a special hearing.
That hearing is set for August 26.
Interveners and parties to the case had until June 28 to file testimonies, all posted on the website for public view. The company will file rebuttal testimony by July 19th with countercomments after. The administrative law judge has scheduled two public comment meetings in Northwest Arkansas.
And those will be held in Eureka Springs and in Rogers.
July 15th and 16th in Eureka at the Inn of the Ozarks, and on the 17th and 18th in Rogers at Embassy Suites. The commission will then issue its ruling 60 days after the August hearing in Little Rock. If approved, easements will be taken next March, land surveyed and clear-cut with construction set for completion June 1st in 2016. But blaze orange yard signs dot businesses and residences across northern Benton and Carroll counties ordering SWEPCO to stop. Opponents fear the consequences of a 48-mile-long, 150-foot-wide slash upon which 150-foot-tall metal towers will be planted every 800 feet into 10-foot-wide by 40-foot-deep bores. The signage was created by Save the Ozarks, based in Carroll County. Attorney Mick Harrison, formerly with the Government Accountability Project in Washington, D.C., is representing the group, hired just a few weeks ago.
So we filed testimony from several experts, including an expert on the lack of need for the new power line and the ins and outs of why SWEPCO has not demonstrated that this is a project that's needed.
Several transmission line studies conducted by SPP determined the need to expand extra high voltage lines in the region to better allocate power facility production scheduling while reducing congestion. It also cited additional energy was needed in Benton and Carroll counties. But critics say the study's population and electricity usage projections are outdated, given the report was produced prior to the Great Recession. The project's environmental impact study, which is not compelled to meet EPA standards, assures stakeholders that necessary and limited impacts will occur on scenic and recreational resources. Views of the line will be hidden by topography and forests, and that the project is reasonable. But numerous testimonies on the docket claim the project is unreasonable. Save the Ozarks attorney Mick Harrison.
So if you combine the lack of need or the lack of demonstration of need with the demonstrated adverse economic and environmental impacts, you should have a pretty good chance of prevailing.
As opposition mounted to the project, SWEPCO and SPP filed motions in June for protective orders of nondisclosure, citing confidentiality based on federal security purposes. Critics complained they were trying to hide their record. In a response to an email query for this report, SPP spokesperson Peter Holscher stated that a reevaluation of transmission line needs has been performed using models and assumptions that are more recent, and Holscher denied that the project is all about selling Arkansas-produced energy to markets out of state. According to SWEPCO's proposal, six possible routes exist for the transmission line. A northern route arcs across southern Missouri, but it's too expensive to build, the utility claims. A southern route is too congested with homes and businesses. Several preferred middle routes run due east past Pea Ridge National Park through the White River Valley, just north of Eureka Springs to the Kings River, crossing 346 parcels of land, including property belonging to Doug Stowe.
So that means that everything in a strip 150 feet wide, commencing 75 feet from our deck, would be removed and kept sterile for generations of natural forest growth.
Doug Stowe is a noted woodworker and author. He and his wife, Jean Elderwind, own 11 acres of forested property just north of Eureka Springs. Stowe, who is a member of Save the Ozarks, believes the extra high voltage transmission line paves the way for an energy superhighway through the Ozarks.
In terms of voltage, a 345 kV line carries four times what a 150, 161 kV line serves now. We have electric power coming in and out of Carroll County on 161 kV lines. They serve us well, and they go on into Harrison and other places and serve other people well. And so here's SWEPCO, and they are proposing to actually quadruple the amount of power that we have available in Carroll County.
A Federal Energy Regulatory Commission Order 1000 issued in 2011 mandated transmission line planning across the nation to better coordinate grid expansion. One map shows a proposed new high-voltage transmission line cutting a clear path across the entire length of North Arkansas. Altogether, nearly 800 acres will be taken for the Shipe Road Kings River project. If property owners refuse to convey easement, the land will be condemned under utility right-of-way eminent domain law. Total project cost, well over $100 million, will be shouldered by ratepayers. Little Rock attorney Mac Norton, with the firm Wright, Lindsay, and Jennings, is representing Benton County interveners Julia R. Neighbors Revocable Trust and trustees, who seek to dismiss the application.
The applicant, SWEPCO, was not the entity that determined the need for the facility. That was done by the Southwest Power Pool. So SWEPCO was in the, you might say, somewhat awkward position of having to refer to SPP for the statement of need. Therefore, the application is, in our view, deficient.
He argues the applicant has a statutory obligation to set out the need to justify the project. When an extra high-voltage transmission line was proposed from the Flint Creek coal-fired power plant near Gentry in Benton County up into southwest Missouri, the project sailed forward. Perhaps SPP and SWEPCO expected no opposition with the Shipe Road Kings River project. Save the Ozarks, expert witness Dr. Hyde Merrill, an MIT-trained engineer, declined being interviewed for this report. But in his testimony, he claims the 345 kV upgrade is excessive and that the current 161 kV transmission line could be reconfigured to manage overloads, to which SPP responded, "It's not a reliable solution in the long term." For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To view testimony and comments regarding this case, you can search the Arkansas Public Service Commission dockets page for case number 13-041-U. In about 5 minutes on Ozarks, for years, Brenda Hancock had heard the stories her mother told about life during World War II.
My sister and I oftentimes had to worry about being late to school because something would trigger a memory and mother would start telling a story and we'd be so involved in listening to the story that we'd lose track of time. And then, so we heard these all our lives.
Nicole Holland left Paris as a young woman and eventually joined the French Resistance. Nicole lives in Springdale, her daughter in Fayetteville. Nicole's story is told in the new book, One of the Lucky Ones. Highlights from their visit to our studio in about 5 minutes on Ozarks at Large.
French composer Darius Milhaud has one of the earliest examples of melding jazz blues idioms with the classical form. That's in his 1923 composition, La Création du Monde. Hi, I'm Katie Henriksen, host of Note Monday through Friday from 11 to noon on KUAF. Join me Tuesday for a performance of La Création du Monde from Darius Milhaud. That's coming up 11 to noon Tuesday right here on KUAF Public Radio.
This is Ozarks at Large. Last week, national developments had an impact on Arkansas business and politics. There is an effort to repeal Amendment 83 and a change in the timetable for implementing some parts of federal health care reform. Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas has the details on those stories and more in his weekly recap of the past week.
An official with the U.S. Treasury Department announced last week that the Obama administration will delay penalties for large employers who do not provide health insurance coverage to workers under the Affordable Care Act. The Treasury Department said it would delay implementation of those employer and insurer reporting requirements for a full year to 2015. In 2014, companies with 50 or more full-time equivalent workers were expected to provide detailed information regarding employees' tax information and related health insurance benefit details. If the information was not provided, employers would be subject to significant fines and penalties. Arkansas's fiscal year ended nearly $300 million in the black as net general revenues broke a record $5 billion. The state ended the year with a $299.5 million surplus. That's up 6.3% above last year. All categories of the budget were funded during the year. Individual income taxes accounted for the lion's share of the revenue. An air quality permit approved by the state's environmental agency remains a crucial hurdle to clear for the Big River Steel Mill, the $1.1 billion super project planning to locate in Osceola. The Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality will hold a public hearing on a draft permit for the new steel mill on July 30th at 6 p.m. in the Osceola High School cafeteria. The ADEQ staff has reviewed the proposed permit and granted it tentative approval. First Federal Bank shares of Harrison acquired First National Security Company, the parent company for First National Bank in Hot Springs and Heritage Bank in Jonesboro. Under the terms of the merger agreement, First Federal will acquire 100% of the stock of First National, and shareholders of First National will receive shares of First Federal and $74 million in cash. Little Rock-based Bank of the Ozarks said it expects to open a loan production office in New York City this week. The office will be an extension of Bank of the Ozarks' successful Dallas-based real estate specialties group. Arkansas Attorney General Dustin McDaniel has rejected the ballot title submitted by a group seeking to push forward on an initiative to legalize marijuana. The group, Arkansans for Medical Cannabis, is pushing a measure somewhat similar to an effort that made the ballot in 2012, but failed in a close general election vote. And less than a week after a gay rights group submitted the wording for a proposed ballot measure that would repeal the 2004 state constitutional amendment that banned same-sex marriage, a gay couple has filed a lawsuit to challenge the law. The lawsuit, which was filed in Pulaski County Circuit Court, challenges Amendment 83, Arkansas's constitutional amendment banning gay marriage. I'm Roby Brock, and that is your Talk Business Arkansas update.
Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large is provided in part by the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. More at AECC.com. This is Ozarks at Large. For years, Brenda Hancock and her sister heard the stories about their mother's life in France before, during, and after World War II. Those stories included her narrow escape from occupied Paris, her involvement with the French Resistance, and meeting the love of her life. Brenda wanted to make sure her mother's life was committed to paper, and she first attempted to write those stories down in the 1980s.
I had written some fluff stuff, and I thought, well, the serious thing is to get mother's story down, and I started with some memories, and I guess I embellished them. She looked at what I wrote, and she said, well, this is a beautiful story, but it's not true. It's not mine. So I went and threw it away.
But then Brenda wrote a poem for her mother, Nicole Holland, about Nicole's life. Nicole was touched by the words and agreed to dictate the events of her life to Brenda. The result is the new book, One of the Lucky Ones. Last week, Brenda Hancock and Nicole Holland came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio to talk about the first part of the book and about Nicole Holland's remarkable story. Brenda Hancock lives in Fayetteville, and her mother, Nicole Holland, now lives in Springdale. Nicole says she considered much of her life to be lucky, including the years before the war began. Her family lived in Paris in a building with a unique design. The first floor had no apartments, but was a large space designed with children of the building in mind.
It was a different place. It was special for the children. There was a huge kitchen and two big rooms with tables and chairs. The first things we did have to go when we come in from school is to sit down. Well, we go up to our apartment. Our mothers give us a snack. We would go down, and we do our homework first. And then we clear up the tables and put some chairs around, and there's two ladies who were with us. There was like big sister, and they start to tell us stories about the Bible and also tell us we were singing.
It was, she remembers, an idyllic time. Many of the children would walk to and from school together. And since the neighborhood had a diverse population, the school would close for both Jewish and Christian holidays.
And it was wonderful when you're a child. It's wonderful.
Things changed dramatically in 1939. Nicole and her siblings were spread out around France on the date that the French declared war on Germany. Nicole Holland remembers the exact date.
It was the 3rd of September, 1939. And my two sisters and I were in Colville. My mother and daddy was in Paris. My younger brother was in Cabourg, which is in Normandy also. And he was already acting. And he went singing. He was the youngest one, but he was 12 then. Oh, younger than that. I needed to have a contract to entertain in a casino.
Nicole and her older sister, Helene, were in a nearby town for their usual late summer visit. They were both in their late teens. Many people in Paris were fleeing the city, but Nicole and her sister, unable to find jobs outside of Paris, convinced their parents they should come back. It's another date that sticks in Nicole's memory, June 14, 1940, the day the Germans came into Paris. She was standing in front of the courthouse for the 4th District of Paris.
And suddenly we heard trucks, and we saw some tanks with a swastika on it. And we stood there right in front of the big courthouse, the main courthouse of all Paris. And we couldn't believe it. We started crying because we saw our flag going down and the German flag going up. And we stood there. And then we saw, my sister saw, two trucks full of prisoners.
Nicole's sister, Helene, incredibly moved toward the French prisoners in the trucks. Nicole says this was not unusual. She says her sister was a strong, brave young woman.
She wasn't scared of anybody. I guess if the devil itself would come in, she would fight him. But she saw that, and she saw the German standing guard to the trucks. She didn't have cigarettes in her purse. So she got her cigarette out, and she gave them to the prisoners. And when the people who were standing there in Paris, they ran to the stores and got some food and wine and give them to the prisoners. So my sister said, we were with a friend of her, we were sleeping the night. My sister said, let's get their name of the prisoner and address. And we sent some letters to the family, knowing they're not dead.
Nicole says they spent the entire night writing letters to the families of those prisoners. They couldn't write about where those men were going. They didn't know. But they could at least let the families know they were still alive. She says life during the occupation was confusing and unsettling. There were rumors and speculation, and many people were uncertain whether they should stay or go. In 1941, Nicole and the other members of her family in Paris had to register with authorities since they were Jewish.
And we did have to wear the Star of David on our clothes. So we did have to sew it up. And my sister was taking, how do you say it, courses? No, she was taking dramatic
acting lessons.
Yes. And then I found a job with a doctor, and I was in the office. And he heard, in 1942, he heard there's going to be a big roundup in Paris of all the Jews. And they'd done it before, but this one was the 16th of July, 1942. And the doctor come in and he said, you cannot go home. Because I was wearing, and he wasn't a Jew. Yeah, I was wearing the Star of David. And he said, go home and get one of your sisters to come and spend the night with you. You're going to stay in the office.
Nicole and her younger sister, Madeline, stayed in the doctor's office during the curfew hours, when Jews could not be on the streets between 8 p.m. and 6 a.m. Just after the curfew broke, one of Nicole's brothers came to the doctor's office with terrifying news. Germans had been to the family's apartment.
My younger brother came and tell us, don't come home. They're Gadelin, and they're looking for you. So don't come home.
Helene had been taken into custody, and Nicole's employer, the doctor, helped Nicole remove every stitch of the yellow Star of David from her dress so Nicole could leave Paris. She did. That anxiety about the fate of her family made the 19-year-old Nicole return. Her mother, worried that Nicole would be taken like her older sister, arranged for Nicole to spend the nights in an apartment upstairs with another woman. Every time there was a knock at the door, everybody jumped. Nicole says the strain was too much, and plans were made to leave again. It was August 4th, 1942, and the plans were created for Nicole, her nephew, who was the same age, and another young woman to leave the city. The Stars of David were again removed from clothing, and Nicole and her nephew, Marcel, tried to take on the appearance of students on an overnight trip. Her mother walked them to a bridge near the train station and then kissed Nicole goodbye. The plan was Nicole would get word back that she was safe and her mother could send her more clothes. But it would be the last time Nicole would see her mother. Our conversation last week had already lasted more than 45 minutes when we reached this part of Nicole's story, when she had left Paris and would not return to the city until after the war. There is so much more to the story, how Nicole was asked to join the French resistance and did so, delivering messages that helped the underground, including information that perhaps in a small way aided in the explosion of a German train. She also writes about meeting her future husband, an American serviceman, and her eventual move with him to Texas. So many stories, she says, but too many to tell in just one sitting.
You're going to have to buy the book and read it. It is, you know, unreal because there's so much happen in between.
Nicole's daughter, Brenda Hancock, wrote the book, One of the Lucky Ones, by writing down what her mother had told her for so many years. The book is written in first person, as if Nicole was telling us the story now, as if we were seated at her kitchen table.
Because it was meant to be for my children, my sister's children, our grandchildren. My sister has a great-granddaughter now. And we wanted our children and their children to know Mimi's stories, to know where they came from, the strength of the genes that they had flowing through their bodies, you know, that this little lady was incredible and that they are a part of her. And through learning about her, through basically sitting and listening to those same stories, that perhaps they would learn, like she, to take it's not what happens to you in life, it's how you respond to what happens that makes all the difference in the world. And so that was the main purpose, is so that the generations of her descendants could learn that same lesson from her that we learned, my sister and I learned. So that's why I wrote it, I did this and I did that, because I wanted them to feel they were at the table.
It is a remarkable story of courage, perseverance, and adventure. She describes herself at the beginning of the war as a naive young woman, not yet ready for the cold, harsh realities of the world. By the end, she survived the war, moved to a completely foreign land, and taught herself English while living in Texas, and then helps raise a family.
Here's the thing. My mother was different from every other Texas mother, but she was the only mother I had. And so that was normal for me. It was normal for me to have a mother that spoke a little differently. It was normal for me to have this mother with all these stories. That's what I knew. And so, no, I didn't realize. In fact, even after I wrote this, I did not realize how amazing she was until, was it a year ago, 2 years ago? A friend said, you really need to read Sarah's Key, which is a novel. And I went to the library and I opened it up and it starts July 16th, 1942. And I went, oh, wait. So I had gotten in the habit of reading stories aloud to Mother. And so I said, Mother, let's read this one. And I started reading Sarah's Key. And of course, we cried through the whole thing. And when I saw what happened to Sarah, I mean, Sarah's story paralleled Mother's. She lost a brother that she felt like it was her fault. Well, they came for Mother and Aunt Ellen at the same time. They took Ellen and she died. Mother did not. Sarah and Mother both married an American, came to America after the war, had children. But then Sarah never overcame. She never could get past it. And it was at that point that I realized that is an amazing little lady. Not only did she survive, not only did she fight back against the Germans, but she came to a country where she could not speak the language. She made a new life. She raised two daughters to be non-prejudiced.
An amazing story, but one filled with tragedy. When Nicole returned to Paris, only one of the 13 members of her immediate family had survived the war and the concentration camps, her younger brother, Robert. Many of the children she had walked to school with before the war didn't survive either.
And I always wonder what would have happened to all those children. There probably would have been doctors and I don't know what else. But only five come back. Four boys and two girls.
Decades later, at age 90, it is hard for Nicole to understand why such horrors could have been committed.
My parents wasn't spared either. with my older sister and her two children and her husband and my younger brother and a little boy who lived in the apartment house, and his family was gone, and mother took him in. And he didn't want to go with my younger sister, who was still in France, and she begged him to go with Madeleine and to go to Marseille and be with his brother. He said, no. He called my mother, and he said, Madame Villermann, I'm going with you. Maybe I can see my mother and my sisters. And he went with my mother, and he went to the gas chamber with my mother.
Nicole Holland's life in Paris and France before and during World War II is told in the new book, One of the Lucky Ones, written by her daughter, Brenda Hancock. Nicole lives in Springdale. Brenda lives in Fayetteville. They both came to our studio last week. Both women will discuss the book at Barnes & Noble in Fayetteville on Thursday, July 25th at 7 p.m. This is Ozarks at Large. Reminder that entries are now being accepted for the 35th Ozark Quilt Fair. It's going to take place this September at the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History in Springdale. Quilters and quilt lovers are invited to display new and antique quilts for show and sale on the museum grounds. If you'd like to know more about this event or would like an entry form, you can call the Shiloh Museum at 750-8165. You can also visit them online at shilohmuseum.org. A reminder that Emmy Award-winning children's entertainer Farmer Jason will perform at the Fayetteville Public Library Wednesday afternoon. Two shows, the first one at 1, the next one at 2 p.m. Both children and adults are expected to be tapping their toes along with Farmer Jason's high-energy blend of music. The performances are free and are open to the public. For more information about the show or anything else happening at the Fayetteville Public Library, you can go online to faylib.org. Support for KUAF comes from the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal, featuring Fort Smith and Fort Smith employers, plus local business news in Northwest Arkansas. Subscriptions and more information are available at 725-0394 or online nwabusinessjournal.com. Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art presents Art Night Out, Rite of Passage, Thursday, July 25th at 8 p.m. This event will explore the museum after dark and include live music, dance, theater, film, and hands-on art projects. Crystal Bridges Restaurant 11 will offer appetizers. Tickets are available online at crystalbridges.org.
Christian radio has popularized modern hymns.
That's exactly the simple kind of brainless praise chorus things that drive me crazy.
So some musicians are trying to revive a traditional style in church.
Our goal is to write songs that teach the faith.
That's later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
In Christ alone, my hope is found. He is my light, my...
All Things Considered this afternoon, beginning at 3 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansas Songs.
Where is Lolito?
Among his many musical innovations, R&B pioneer Louis Jordan of Brinkley helped introduce calypso music to North America, and his 1947 song Early in the Morning was the Arkansas' first to pay homage to the island-based musical genre.
Early in the morning and I can't get right. Had a little date with my baby last night. Now it's early in the morning. morning. Early in the morning and I ain't got nothing but the blues.
Recorded in April 1947, the Rumba Blues features the Calypso Boys guesting on percussion. Several esteemed members of Louis Jordan's Timpani Five play on the track, like trumpeter Aaron Eisenhall, pianist Wild Bill Davis, and drummer Joe Chris Columbus Morris. Chuck Berry-influenced Carl Hogan of St. Louis plays electric guitar, while Cave Spring, Missouri-born bassist Dallas Bartley gets co-writing credit, along with Louis Jordan and Leo Hickman. Early in the Morning was originally released in October 1947 as a 78 single, with Lookout as the B-side.
Hey, lady, you may think I'm Spanish, but I ain't.
Monroe County native Louis Jordan returned to other Afro-Cuban-styled songs and continued performing Early in the Morning, including featuring it in his 1949 Western-themed movie, Lookout Sister.
Early in the morning and I can't get right. Had a little date with my baby last night. Now it's early in the morning.
Early in the Morning was a well-regarded enough hit from Louis Jordan's back catalog that it was among the first on the list when the Arkansasian re-recorded his biggest songs a decade later for a new label, Mercury, on the new long-playing album format in 1956 and 1958, heard here.
And I can't get right. Had a little date with my baby last night. Now it's early in the morning. Ooh, in the morning. Early in the morning, and I ain't got nothing but the blues. I went to all the places where we used to go. I went to her house, but she don't live there no more. Now it's early in the morning.
Calypso music had caught on by then in the United States. In fact, even Lafayette County native Maya Angelou recorded a Calypso-themed album during this time, along with Harry Belafonte and the rest.
Early in the morning, I can't do right. Had a little fight with my baby last night, and it's early in the morning. Don't you know it's early in the morning? Early in the morning, I ain't got nothing, no nothing but the blues.
Early in the Morning had its own life as a song beyond Louis Jordan the Timpani Five as well. The song appears in Five Guys Named Mo, the 1990s musical about Louis Jordan. It's heard on Ray Charles' 1961 album Genius Sings the Blues, one of many Louis Jordan songs Ray Charles recorded. Joe Cocker, Buddy Guy, Gapemouth Brown, Irma Thomas, and B.B. King have all covered it, the latter on his 1999 Louis Jordan tribute album. In the early 1970s, even songwriter Harry Nilsson recorded this version.
I went to Doobie Chase to get something to eat. The waitress looked at me, she said, Harry, you sure look beat. I said it's early in the morning. Don't you know it's early in the morning? Early in the morning.
The popularity of Early in the Morning has continued. Little Rock native Jim Dickinson included it among three Louis Jordan songs on his 2009 album, Dinosaurs Run in Circles. In 2010, Early in the Morning appeared on Cyndi Lauper's Memphis Blues album, recorded with Alan Toussaint. And the musical legacy of Monroe County's Louis Jordan stretches on. Here in its entirety is Arkansasian Louis Jordan of Brinkley's Early in the Morning, as sung by Cyndi Lauper on her 2010 album, Memphis Blues, recorded with Alan Toussaint.
the blues. Went to all the places that we used to go. Rent his house, but he don't live there no more. Now it's early in the morning.
Early in the morning.
Ooh, in the morning.
Early in the morning.
Early in the morning, and I ain't got nothing but the blues. I went to his best friend's house, but he was out. I knocked on his mother's door, she began to shout.
Cyndi Lauper from her 2010 album Memphis Blues with Alan Toussaint singing Arkansas-er Louis Jordan of Brinkley's Early in the Morning. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of FM 89 and Experiment Station Studios. Associate producer of Arkansongs is Keith Merks. For more information, visit arkansongs.org. Arkansongs, since 1999.
This is Ozarks at Large. One music note, the Arkansas Music Pavilion, also known as the AMP, has announced another addition to its 2013 season. Lynyrd Skynyrd, the iconic Southern rock band, has been added. They will be at the AMP at the Washington County Fairgrounds on Thursday, September 12th at 7:30 p.m. Gates will open that night at 6. Tickets will go on sale Friday morning at 9 and begin at $34.50. If you want to know more information, amptickets.com. A sad note, Curly Miller, a member of the Old 78s band, died on July 4th. Curly and his wife, Carol Ann Rose, had appeared in the Furman Garner Performance Studio. They had also given myself and my colleague Antoinette Grajeda a great tour of their fantastic mushroom farm, Sweden Creek Farms, near Kingston, a couple of years ago. And I also had the privilege to share a show with them at Crystal Bridges last September. It was called Gather Round the Radio, and Curly and Carol Ann, along with Ray and Melanie Palmer, performed as the Old 78s that night to get the crowd warmed up. Here is one of the songs they played that evening, Inside 11, at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. Oh.
Thanks for having us.
Curly Miller playing with the Old 78s at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art last September. Curly Miller died on July 4th. He will be missed by all fans of great music in Northwest Arkansas. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Kingston. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. Thanks so much for tuning in on this Monday. Antoinette Grajeda will join me tomorrow for another brand new edition of Ozarks at Large.